plate a potential nugget.
And you also talk about women thinking about ambition slightly different from men. And you say that there are different dimensions to it. Could you elaborate on the nuance here, Sally?
Yeah, I think that women often struggle with defining themselves as ambitious. And part of that is because they have seen women who are perceived of as being ambitious. They have seen them get so negatively tagged for it. And, you know, you can go back. I mean, you can see someone running for president. Oh, she's so ambitious. Yeah, she's running for president. What do you think? Most people who are going to be running for president are going to be pretty ambitious. Women who are, you know, in very high positions are often criticized while they're so ambitious. You know, they must not have any personal life or any home life, or, you know, just be very difficult to be around. So I think that women often get kind of scared off from being seen as ambitious. And, you know, in the book, one of the things I quote this psychiatrist on the Upper East Side of New York City who worked with women who were mostly either very senior women in investment banking or very senior women in law firms. And she said that about 80% of the clients who come to see her in the first session say, "I want you to know I'm not ambitious." Well, you don't get to be partner in a New York City top 10 law firm if you're not ambitious. It doesn't just fall into your lap. So it's that discomfort with being perceived of as ambitious, or the language around ambition. And I think that has inhibited women often from really developing, making the commitment to develop to their full potential.
And you also talk about the different dimensions around which they're ambitious in terms of some of the other domains of life and other interests. Could you expand on that just for women to take note of what else could be called ambitious?
Yes, certainly. And I think that's, you know, again, that's changing a little bit. Women have always looked at ambition at work as being balanced or calibrated with being to some degree ambitious for the quality of their family life, ambitious for the relationships within their family, ambitious for the ability, you know, to be a good family member, a good team player in a neighborhood association, recognized as, you know, a good neighbor, a good contributor, good in a nonprofit role that they may take. So I think that women have often had a rather balanced way of viewing ambition as something you strive to have. You're ambitious to have a well-balanced life. And I think there wasn't that much room for men to do this in the past, but I certainly see that as beginning to change, whereas men are more likely to also articulate their own ambition in terms of the, you know, the capacity, the launching they provide for their daughters and the kinds of relationships that they have at home. So I think that's really changing slowly again, but in that way.
And one of the other leaders, women leaders, when they looked at this question or looked at this insight from you, they said, you know, given that women often think about ambition in a little more of a holistic manner beyond just work, there's a reasonable chance that they end up finding the true north probably more often than men. Do you see the two connected? And empirically or anecdotally, do you have a view on women finding the true north in life more frequently than men?
I think that women have more awareness of wanting to find their true north because men will often feel that they don't have much of a choice, that they've just got to, you know, get the best job they can and go for it and make it a success. And they don't have the options. And women will be more likely to think, they'll want to ask themselves, am I really enjoying the quality of my days? Do I feel that I am making the best contribution with my talents? Am I making the world a better place through what I'm doing? I find women very avid to ask these questions, even at a midpoint in their career. Whereas I think in the past, that's been tough for men, unless they're in, you know, a position of great privilege, to feel that they even, you know, have the option to ask that question, because they just have to, you know, buckle down and do what they and do whatever they do. And sort of, you know, as Marshall would say, they have to suck it up rather than using it to, as an opportunity to really think about, you know, how is this serving me? How is it serving the world? How is this aligning with my purpose? So I think we're now at a time in the workplace where there's a lot of language around that, around purpose, around meaning, et cetera. And I know that it's often considered to be something millennials brought into the workplace. But having been on the track I've been for the last 30 years, my observation is that women kind of got there first. There were more women thinking in those terms. Women sort of pioneered that idea that, you know, really we need to look at work in the larger context, holistically, as you say, about meaning and purpose in life. It's an element of that. And I think that that sort of opened up permission for people to look at that. And now it's something that, that men and women are both much more comfortable with.
And if I may persist with that, Sally, what do you think is driving the change among the men? Millennials definitely probably are one factor. Any other factors you think that are driving this slow change in men over time?
Yes, a couple things. One, I think, is that, again, having watched this up close for so long, how we define excellence in leadership in organizations has really shifted over the last 30, 35 years. In the 80s, for example, which was really the last period when women had virtually nothing to do with leadership, the idea of a leader was, you know, execution, performance. Somebody's got to be tough. You've got to, you know, make your numbers, drive everybody else to make numbers. And, you know, we had some of these. I remember Fortune magazine used to have an annual issue called America's Toughest Leader. And it was a profile of a man who seemed like he was the most difficult person on the planet to work for. And the sort of underlying theme was always, you know, you got to be tough. Of course, I do want to say that one thing I got to watch was how most of those men actually ended up driving their companies, if not into the ground, into very serious, serious problems later on. But it was, you know, just sort of how we thought of leadership in a corporate setting. And that has changed. And I think part of it has been the participation of women, but a big part of it has been the change in the nature of technology to be much more interactive and networked and web-like and naturally, to some extent, inclusive. So I think the technology has shaped what we expect from leaders, and also the nature of the economy, the switch to more of a knowledge economy where knowledge is distributed more broadly. So the top dog leader can't be expected ever to know everything because there's so much knowledge distributed through companies. So through the 90s and early 2000s, you really began to get a different way of looking at what constituted excellence in leadership. And, you know, Peter Drucker wrote about it. You know, someone like Tom Peters certainly wrote about it. And I think that that, you know, kind of beautifully, there was a confluence between what women were bringing and that larger change that has served women well, has served organizations well, and has helped bring forth more and more men who are thoughtful, reflective, self-aware, and humble leaders than would have ever been possible 30 or 40 years ago.
I'm reminded of my conversation with Professor Stuart Friedman of Wharton, who speaks about four domains of life that we all should think about: work, home, community, and self. Not necessarily in that order. Out of these four, I find that work and home are often well understood. So I asked Tu when he was on the podcast what he meant by the other two, community and self. And here's what he said.
So the community piece, just to answer your question about what is that and how is it relevant, people struggle with that. And I often get questions about, well, what is community and why does that matter? Community captures kind of everything outside of you and your work and your family. So that includes your network of friends and neighbors, people in, you know, the place where you live. But it could also include people that you are engaged with in some kind of political group or religious group. Mm-hmm. So that usually has some meaning for most people. It may not be the most important thing. Mm-hmm. For some people, it is. And the self, of course, is who are you as an individual, you know, in your own private sphere, the things that matter to your physical health, your mental health and emotional growth, and your spiritual life, which it is important to some people and not to others. Mm-hmm. But these aspects of our existence are, you know, for most people, pretty important. So these four buckets, if you will, seem to capture most of our experience. And it's also simple. There's not 12 categories, there's just four. Mm-hmm. And last point about this, I ask people to define these domains of their lives in ways that make sense to them. So there's no rigid definition that I impose, but rather it's a device to help you to think about the differentiated parts of your life. And that helps you make sense of how to bring them together. In order to make sense of the whole, you've got to see what the parts are. And so sure. People make their own decisions, choices about, well, what does home mean to me? How do I define family? And the way you define it might be different than the way I define it, and et cetera. So it's useful in that way that everything about this approach is subjectively defined by the learner, the user.
Back to what Sally says, very often we think about ambition only in the context of work, but it's worth having a holistic view of the various domains of life and having a calibrated ambition that can serve us in the long game of life.